Welcome to the battle between the states. We've got some championship debaters, college debaters from Oregon and Washington, gathered here in the City Hall of Kirkland to debate the topic, when forced to choose, Washington is better than Oregon. My name's Gary Gillespie. I'm the debate coach at Northwest University here in Kirkland, and I'm going to be introducing my debaters, and then the coach from Seattle U, Ross Merritt, will introduce his debaters, and then the coach from Portland State University, Chris Richter, is going to introduce his. Then I'll explain the rules briefly so you know kind of what's going on this lighthearted debate among friends. Washington and Oregon are up there in the northwest corner. We're sort of neglected and forgotten about the rest of the country, but we have our own rivalry, and tonight, or today, we're going to settle it. My debaters will be the first. They're the opening government team, and the first speaker will be Sam Addy. He's from St. Louis, Missouri. He's a biblical studies major. His partner is Ryan Matheson. He's from Covington, Washington. He's a communication major. Ross, could you introduce?
Representing Seattle University, we have Nick Hendricks from Chicago, Illinois, and Mike Wineson from Bainbridge Island. And just to get a quick look in on Washington being better than Oregon, Michael Wineson here was part of the highest-ranking U.S. team at this year's World Championships.
We're proud of Michael. He's also one of the top public speakers. He won first place in public speaking at the World Championships, which is an amazing accomplishment. And I know that your team has some great achievements, too. Chris, tell us about your team.
My team, which will be composing the entirety of the opposition bench, starts at the top with alumni Josh Gross, who recently graduated with his degree in liberal studies from Portland State. Joining him is Carly Nairn, who is currently pursuing postgraduate work at Portland State in the area of communication studies. They'll be joined together on the opening opposition. On the closing opposition, we have Lindsay Bing, who is currently majoring in Arabic at Portland State. And joining her will be Alyssa Los, who is majoring in international relations. And they'll be composing the closing opposition and including the last speakers in the debate on this topic. None of whom, I believe, are native Oregonians, but have come to embrace Oregon about as much as possible.
All right, then. Each student is going to give a 6-minute speech. After the first minute of each speech and before the last minute, the other team can stand and beg questions. Now, the person speaking has the right to accept the question or to tell them to sit down. And that's perfectly all right for them to do that. This is world-style debate. It's the format that's used at the World Championships. Oxford and Cambridge and all of the European schools use this style of debate. It's based on a parliamentary model of a government bench and an opposition bench. And at the end of the debate, the judges are going to decide who they think did the best job among the four teams. And let me introduce you the judges. From Northwest University, communication professor Kara Heinrich, she's the former coach at Seattle University. She'll be judging today also. Then we have Jordan Goddard. He's going to be graduating from Harvard University in a couple months, and he was our team captain in 2005. Then Jed Nelson, he's a specialist in the National Guard. He was our team captain in 2006. And so they're going to be using their expertise to decide. And at the end of the debate, they'll be ushered into the green room while the coaches, including Nigel Reed, our assistant debate coach, will give some commentary on how we think the debate went. So when forced to choose, is Washington better than Oregon? Well, let's decide. Oh, and our Speaker of the House today is Shayna Cochran. She's an alumnus from Northwest. She'll be presiding over the debate. So, Shayna.
I now call this House to order to debate the resolution when forced to choose Washington State is better than Oregon. I call on Prime Minister to give a speech lasting no more than 6 minutes.
As a native from St. Louis, Missouri, I feel like I have a little bit of an outside perspective. And don't get me wrong, I really enjoy my relocation to the Northwest region, especially the West Coast in general, just a great area. And I think we can all kind of, as West Coast individuals, agree this is a great area. And Washington and Oregon are great, but when we're forced to choose, I totally believe that Washington would be superior to Oregon. One of the main reasons we're going to look at today is from an economic standpoint. And really, why is that even important? Why is the economy important? Those kind of notions. But it's something that we should focus on. So with that notion, let me just tell you, I enjoy Starbucks. And when I go to Starbucks in Washington, where it was actually founded, I have to pay a sales tax on that. But you know what? I don't really mind paying a sales tax on that Starbucks because of all the stuff that I get along with Washington. Now, granted, I wouldn't have to pay that in Oregon, not at this time. But why is that important? Obviously, Oregon's going to have to make up for that sales tax somewhere. So, and I'll get into that a little more later. My partner will augment the argument of the tax structure a little more between both states. But from an economic standpoint, why is this even important? Why do we care about the economy at all? Well, it increases one's standard of living, and it facilitates this idea of one being able to pursue their goals or their ideologies of what they believe is important to them or will cause them to have happiness, the pursuit of happiness. So this notion of the economy facilitates this this notion of standard of living. Sure, go ahead.
Yes, but Washington has one of the highest costs of living in the country, as long as one of the highest sales tax at 6.5% in the country. Don't you think that's rather severe?
She brings a good point up, considering that. But, I mean, when you look at the standard of living, yeah, you're having to pay more, but you're getting more too, and you're making more money to pay for those expenses too. So it kind of balances out. And especially we'll see that when you actually have a job and you have things that you can do, not to say that, it's people in Oregon don't work, but there is an issue with the unemployment rate that we see. So, but in any case, no one thinks. So let's compare some of these stats. I mean, when we just look at the stats, Washington has a GDP that's more than twice that of Oregon, at $331 billion. Oregon with less than half that at $160 billion. So we see that this overall, Washington contributes more to the national economy whenever we take it from a national perspective. Not now. Washington has the highest minimum wage, and it's consistently had the highest minimum wage right now of $8.55. So when we look at, the type of economic prosperity that people are going to be sharing in, we kind of see these as two big factors with the GDP of Washington contributing to the national economy, and also we have the highest minimum wage. Oregon ranks fifth in unemployment in the nation right now. Washington is past the 30 mark. So we see that with the economic condition, Washington has more employment opportunity, and part of that, of course, is because of the big companies we have. Boeing, which is huge in the aerospace industry. I mean, the government even will, depend on them for certain contracts and aerospace engineering developments. I mean, we have Microsoft and Amazon. So there's this, the tech industry has a big stamp here in Washington, and part of the reason is because Washington is willing to give those companies the kind of tax breaks that help to facilitate business and want them to stay. We don't see Oregon doing the same thing. As a matter of fact, what I'd like to augment on right now is Oregon actually discourages business to a certain degree. This is kind of a funny example that I'd like to point attention to. Right, Oregon doesn't pay sales tax, right? You don't pay sales tax in Oregon. But they have to come up with some way to finance the governmental structure, right? So they got to make up for it somewhere. And unfortunately, that is in not facilitating business. We see this one pizza joint that was in Portland, right, moved across the street, wanted to move across the street anyway. And the government was going to charge them a $27,000 fee just to move across the street. So, I mean, like, why? Why would that be the case? There's just these weird sort of tax arrangements. And so what happened? The pizza business moved to Vancouver. So we see some of the businesses moving out of Oregon because they don't want to, deal with the types of tax structures, and Washington facilitates business. So we look at, if we look at the nature of, you know, sort of the business in Oregon, we see that, they use a lot of their natural resources in their as exports. So like lumber, mining, these are two of the big economical machines in Oregon that actually seem to deplete it from its natural resources. Now, granted, lumber will grow back, but not nearly at the rate that, you know, the potatoes and apples of Eastern Washington will. So we see that even on a natural resource level, Oregon's economy is more based on depleting its natural resources, which seems to be kind of connected to a third note from the third world. But anyway, so we see that Washington is a better state to do business in, that this is a state that facilitates the movement of business. And by Oregon, you know, moving out of having a structure that kind of doesn't facilitate business, we see this as something that should definitely be considered when we decide, is Oregon better than Washington? And we would say yes.
I thank the Prime Minister for his eloquent remarks. Now call on the Leader of Opposition to present a speech lasting no more than 6 minutes.
Thank you, everyone, for being here today. It is a real honor. And since this is televised, I'd especially like to thank Gary for giving us a topic so clearly biased in our favor. Look, honestly, there's a reason all of the judges are from Washington. We're the Beaver State, you're the Evergreen State. Our state symbolically eats your state and uses its carcass for industrial projects. That's what we're looking at here today. That's the divide. Now, I need to first go through and smash everything that came out of the previous speaker, because it's going to be really easy. And then talk about how your state is geologically inferior to our state, how it's culturally inferior to our state, and then Carly is going to come along and tell you how it's actually economically inferior, despite everything that you heard out of here. First off, he says sales tax. In Oregon, it's okay to go to Starbucks, even though you have to pay sales tax. But in Oregon, the poor can afford to go to Starbucks. Or go somewhere better, which we think there's much better coffee shops that come from Oregon. He says unemployment is high in Oregon, but what he doesn't understand is that gives us all a chance to catch up on our reading and start bands and important things like that. So he misunderstands that altogether. Then he says, well, it's okay, because Washington has a higher minimum wage, but it doesn't cover their highest cost of living. So that really doesn't go anywhere, does it? Then he says that businesses are discouraged in Oregon, except that corporations pay no tax, which is why we have big businesses like Nike and Intel and Hewlett-Packard and all of these other ones. So I don't think that he really understands our tax structure in the slightest. And finally, he talked about Oregon exporting its logs, except that Washington is the center of the logging industry, who exports far more logs than we do, and our natural resource-based economy is primarily orchards based out of Southern Oregon, the Harry and David Corporation. So basically, he sounds like he comes from St. Louis and doesn't know what he's talking about. Why? I don't know. Now let me tell you how your state is geologically inferior. Who here can swim? I hope all of you, because we could drop into the ocean at any moment. There are 13 major faults running underneath the Puget Sound area alone. That scares the bejesus out of me. That's why you have 4 times as many earthquakes as we do that are averaged 2 points higher on the Richter scale that do hundreds of millions of dollars of damage. We're talking AIG bonus levels of damage. This is a big problem. But it's not just earthquakes. You are infested with volcanoes. Did you know that? In the last 4,000 years, you've had over 40 volcanic eruptions compared to R8. That's a big difference. It's like the acne of a state. This is what, and you're like a 14-year-old boy. Of course, the biggest one we're talking about is Mount St. Helens, which erupted and killed 57 people, deposited ash in 11 states, and did over $3 billion worth of damage. And you know what? They haven't apologized once. Not to any of us. Not a sorry card, nothing. We find that rude. And you know what? They had the nerve to erupt again in 05, again in 06, and again in 08. And I gotta tell you, have you ever tried driving to work with Mount St. Helens erupting off the side of the freeway? Because it's very difficult. They have never apologized. Now, of course, we have a big volcano, too. We had Mount Mazama. And when it erupted, it was 42 times more powerful than Mount St. Helens. So our volcano is bigger and better than yours. But it also did it in 5000 BC, which means that our volcano had the manners to blow up when there was no one around to bother and leave us with some beautiful tourist area we now call Crater Lake. So our volcanoes have manners. Yours, you use to menace our state. We don't appreciate it. You owe us an apology. Now let me tell you how your state is culturally inferior to ours. First off, I don't know why you can't find something better to do on the weekend than ritually murder people, but you all have a lot of serial killers. Did you know there are 42 serial killers in Washington? Like the Hillside Strangler, Ted Bundy, the Green River Killer? That's a lot! I mean, frankly, between the serial killers and the volcanoes, I'm amazed there's anyone here to debate. Oh, please, would you like to apologize for Mount St. Helens, sir?
No, I'd rather address...
Notice he did not apologize for Mount St. Helens, not a lick of forgive, sir. No, thank you, sir. If you can't take responsibility, then I don't need to take your question. We here in Oregon prefer to make art rather than murder people in a ritualistic fashion. That's why we have great writers like Ken Kesey, Ursula K. Le Guin, and Chuck Palahniuk, whereas in Washington, your major contribution to literature seems to be the Uncle Sam billboard on the side of I-5. We have great filmmakers like Oscar nominees Henry Selick, Todd Haynes, and Gus Van Sant, whereas Washington is currently best known for being the setting of the film Twilight. Filmed in Oregon, by the way, we're just blaming it on you because of Mount St. Helens. We're also home to Matt Groening, creator of The Simpsons, and if you're like B-movies, we have Bruce Campbell, the best B-actor of all time, stars of films like The Evil Dead and Bubba Hotep. You got none of that. But the thing is, it's not an accident that we have these things. We actually take steps to foster this sort of behavior rather than waiting for it to happen upon it like Washington does. We have organizations like Film Action Oregon, which offers tax breaks and business incentives to film in Oregon. We have the Oregon Literary Council, which gives out $25,000 in literary fellowships every year to aspiring writers to work on their projects. We have the Milepost 5 subsidized housing for painters and artists that's being built in Portland right now. That's the reason why we have Leanne Marshall, who won Bravo's Project Runway, and Washington is the place that gave us flannel. Now, I know you're saying, didn't Seattle have a music scene at some point? Well, a lot of people died, and that's what happened to that. But more importantly, the thing is misunderstood about that is that the real music scene that came out of Washington wasn't out of Seattle. Grunge was a flash in the pan. The real music scene came out of Olympia, where you had fantastic bands like Bikini Kill and a whole lot of others whose names are escaping me at the moment. And the question is, what happened to all of those bands? And I'll tell you, they all moved to Portland. Why? Because there was a big earthquake in 2001, and it scared the bejesus out of all of them and said, I don't want to live here anymore. That's why we now have the best music scene in the country, according to a recent documentary by MTV. That's why we are culturally superior to y'all. And I already explained about the earthquakes and the volcanoes. Frankly, be careful pounding. I don't want us to fall into Idaho Bay. It could happen at any moment. Thank you very much.
I thank the Leader of Opposition for his hilarious speech and now call on the Deputy Prime Minister to present a speech lasting no more than 6 minutes.
Well, of course I'm not going to apologize for Mount St. Helens, because they're not going to apologize for the major destruction that their mountain caused 5,000 BC. But today we've come to debate this notion that Washington is better than Oregon, primarily focused on the differences that these two states have. I'd like to look at some of the similarities between the two states. First off, Washington believes in preserving historical sites, which is why the Seattle Underground exists today. Oregon also believes in these sites, having over 70 different ghost towns, the most in the nation. It seems that many residents wanted their towns to one day become an archaeological site, or they just didn't want to live in Oregon anymore. I'm not quite sure. We'll leave that question up to the archaeologists. Washington believes in the environment, Seattle being the second cleanest city in the nation. Oregon, too, believes in the environment, after being federally mandated to clean up their Willamette River by the Superfund project. After $2 billion in spending, it seems the project wasn't super enough because they're still only fifth in the nation as far as cleanest cities are concerned. But there's one more difference. Washington is working hard to bolster the middle class through companies like Microsoft and Amazon.com. However, Oregon also has this idea of class structure in hand, the educated and the ignorant, those who know how to pump gas and those who don't. But today, I'd like to look at this idea of innovation in business and in our culture, which is one of the reasons why Washington is superior to Oregon. But first, I'd like to take a little bit of refutation. They mentioned how we have a lot of serial killers. Well, the reason why we have a lot of serial killers compared to Oregon is because in Oregon, you can't find anyone. In Oregon, you can drive for miles and miles and miles, and you just see 70 different ghost towns.
Sir.
And go ahead.
What you're saying is you can drive for miles and miles and miles and not be killed on the side of the road.
Because there's no one there to kill you. It just comes back to this idea that there's nobody who wants to live in Oregon, which is why their population is half that of Washington. And then they talked about this idea of how we're geologically inferior. Well, I'd rather have a state that has some consistency than a state that doesn't. Oregon's north looks like Washington. Oregon's south looks like California. Oregon's east looks like Nevada, and we have no idea where Florence came from. So, I'd much rather live in a consistent state. So, moving on to this idea of innovation. What's so important about innovation? Innovation is where we get our computers, our cars, our airplanes. It's where we got the latte. And if they want to completely disregard this idea of Starbucks, which basically started it all, then I'd like them to completely disregard any of their other coffee chains. But...
Sir.
No. But with this idea of innovation comes this idea of tax structure. And as my partner mentioned, the $27,000 to move across the street, which really hinders businesses. But it also has this other notion where these fees have to come from somewhere. Recently, Wayne Krieger, a member of the House of Representatives of Oregon, proposed a way to help ease Oregon's tax pains by proposing a $54 fee to register a bike, which is $1 less than a car. Now, apparently, bicycles in Oregon are wearing the roads too much with their extra thin treads. Or Wayne realized that Oregon needed some extra money from their failing tax infrastructure and felt that the bicyclists should pay for it because they were making him late to work.
Sir.
Go ahead.
The reason we have tax issues is because people live in Vancouver across the river so they don't have to pay our property taxes, work in Oregon so they don't have to pay your sales, and then shop in Oregon so you don't have to pay sales tax. Your town, state has a city full of tax cheats. We're just trying to do the right thing.
Or maybe it's because Oregon's tax structure is based on income tax, one of the least stable taxes in the nation. In fact, Oregon's tax structure has been criticized by almost every single country within Oregon other than the Oregon government, but the Oregon citizens are willing to critique its own taxes. But, so, moving on to this idea of innovation, and why would companies business themselves in Vancouver? It's because they don't have to pay these massive property taxes and these massive fees. Because in Washington, you can move across the street without paying $27,000 every time you want to move your business. If you want to start another chain, you don't have to go through all the different loops and legal crap that you have to normally go through. Please.
Why even try? There's a Starbucks in every corner, so...
Because in Washington, we believe in more than just coffee, which is why we founded Microsoft. We believe in more than just coffee. So, this notion that Oregon is better because of this geologically inferiority just doesn't hold up because Oregon doesn't have any consistency with its state whatsoever. And this whole idea that we have more crime really is because we're more concentrated and we're busy actually working towards a better environment and a better culture because we have these ideas called cities, which is why we have double the national GDP. Now, Oregon does have cities, but clearly not as prosperous cities as Washington. And so today, the next time you enjoy a latte at Starbucks with your laptop, waiting for your flight, remember this. The greatest state in the Northwest, Washington, inspires innovation through their robust economy and their tax structure. Not to mention, Oregon actually has a middle class, not just people who can pump gas and people who can't.
I thank the Deputy Prime Minister for his speech. Now call on the Deputy Leader of Opposition to present a speech lasting no more than 6 minutes.
The opening government talked a lot about their big population and how that helps their state. Well, we in Oregon believe it's not the size of the population that counts, it's what you do with it. And that's why Oregon, or Portland, is called the city that works, while Seattle is referred to as Canada's Tijuana. We will be illustrating the divide between Washington and Oregon's business climate and demonstrating Oregon's superiority in three sectors. First, the service, then manufacturing, and lastly, technology. Because, wow, is there a lot to say about Washington. But before I get into that, a little bit of refutation. They talked about How nobody wants to live in Oregon. And this goes back to the population that says it's not the size of the city that counts, it's what you do with it. And they talked about its failing tax structure and how my partner already mentioned about that Vancouver and how it's used as a tax shelter so they can get best of both worlds, so to say. And we don't believe that's very nice. We're very better mannered about all that. He talks about their cities and how they're great. Well, not if you've ever tried to drive through Seattle. He says that Washington is one of the cleanest states in the world, and yet they give us grief about registering bikes because that's so bad. Oh, yeah? And Portland's also on a grid, which makes it really easy to get around, unlike Seattle. So they talk about preserving a historical culture and everything like that. They don't have the Shanghai tunnels, which we do have in Portland, one of the coolest historical preservations on the East or on the West Coast. We see that as a far superior historical preservation. Go ahead.
Seattle actually is on a grid system, too, and it's ranked second in...
Yeah, but it's really bad trying to drive through it.
Cleanest city, so...
Would you like to apologize for Mount St. Helens?
Sure.
So, now that I've pretty much destroyed his case, I'm going to go on to the business aspect of Oregon and Washington, comparing and contrasting, because we think that's a really important part of it. They talked about Starbucks a lot. Wow. And they talked about how it's been one of the best things to happen for Washington as a state, and how it started it all, how it's made the latte. Yeah, because you're really from Italy. That's right. We don't see it as starting it all. We see it as starting it all, maybe, but economically flawed. They closed 600 stores in 2008 and another 300 in 2009, with over 8,000 jobs eliminated in the U.S. alone. We see that as being pretty bad. They're seen as a prime example of U.S. cultural and economic imperialism. And why is that? Because only 6% of their coffee, one of the largest coffee producer in the world, or coffee company in the world, only uses 6% certified fair trade beans. Why is this important? Because overall, the U.S. gives more humanitarian aid to Africa. When 1%, if Africa was able to increase their trade by 1%, they would no longer have to rely on humanitarian aid on the U.S. We see that as really important. And as Starbucks, being the biggest coffee company in the world, they should be taking the incentive. But you know what? They don't. They're just a really bad company like that. But what's the counter to that? Oregon has what's called Stumptown. And not only are they excellent coffee in very many ways, they diversify their portfolio. They're taking on New York because they're consistently stable in their economic model and their business practices. They have had direct trade for over 10 years where they are face-to-face with their coffee growers and farmers in Africa, and they deal with that on a daily basis. They not only have a stable economic model, they use the money and incentivize new growers through projects such as Bikes for Rwanda, because they understand the importance of that relationship. Going on into manufacturing, we see Boeing. They use Boeing as a prime example of economic superiority in Washington. We would say absolutely not. It laid off over 10,000 people this year alone, where over 25,000 families in the Puget Sound depend on them. We see this company as too big to fail, and that is inherently unstable, and that's why it is bad. It can lose when the company went on strike last year, they lost over $2 billion for those families in the Puget Sound and the state itself. We see that as not being viable in that way. So what's a viable manufacturing company in Oregon? What is far superior? We say that Nike, in this instance, has far superior business models when it comes to that, because they're very consistent. They diversify their portfolio. They are creating new markets all the time. Their sponsors are everywhere. Can you watch a sports game on TV without seeing Nike? No, you cannot. They're sponsors of higher education, especially University of Oregon. They get into venture capital projects like the Ica Studios, who was responsible for the animated movie Coraline. So we see Nike superior in that way. And the last one, technology. Well, and they use Microsoft as their prime example. Well, all we have to say about that, I guess to say, is Microsoft software would be useless without Intel chips. which are made in Oregon. We see that everything, from the shoes you wear, to the coffee you drink, to the what you put on your computer, it all comes from Oregon. It's all far more superior than what is coming out of Washington. For all these reasons, you have to believe Oregon is superior than Washington.
I thank the Deputy Leader of Opposition for her speech and now call on the Member of Government to present a speech lasting no more than 6 minutes.
Well, so far we haven't heard much of an affirmative defense of Oregon, at least not one that would actually be particularly consistent. I think that it's a little bit interesting that you would start open by saying that, we believe that Starbucks has fundamentally unethical business practices. Now let me tout the virtues of Nike, which I believe, I'm not positive of this, but I believe they make their shoes out of the skins of Cambodian children and sewn with their own sinew. So if we're going to line up one, yes, I'd rather say that Starbucks, in comparison to Nike, probably upholds relatively good international business standards, given that human flesh isn't used in the production of their product. But let's go over this a little bit more. What's been a recurring theme here that we've seen on side opposition? Well, all of them have been trying to say, we believe that Washington has larger failures, and we ignore the fact that they also have larger successes. That's because, as a state, Washington believes in actually trying, whereas Oregon seeks to achieve mediocrity by never really trying anything at all, if anything, just duplicating our ideas. So what we saw here is, well, we got some of your artists to come down to us, and that's great. We can't explain why it is that Washington continues to not only keep more of its native sons and daughters in its borders for their lifetimes, but also imports more of the best and brightest from around the nation and around the world, which is a strange pattern. Well, we can offer some illumination as to why this is the case. That is because for all of the negative things they talked about, Washington, yes, provides adversity, and that provides for stronger people. After all, if you were going to be living in a place like Seattle, and on one side you see Mount Rainier, which will one day explode, killing millions, we would say that that is something that helps you better appreciate life and causes you to work harder. Our people read no less. We simply have a more sense of urgency when we do it, because we don't know when that's going to end up coming to an end. Now, they might say that we don't value the creative people within our state, but that's patently false. After all, we put all of our mainstream blue-collar and white-collar workers downtown in Seattle, which is covered up on fill and also the remains of our formerly dead, burnt-out city. And meanwhile, we put all of our liberal arts majors up on Capitol Hill, which is deep bedrock, which means that when the flood eventually does come from the earthquake and the sound sloshes about and destroys half a Puget Sound and wipes out the bottom part, like an ark, that will be the part that is preserved. Ladies and gentlemen, we believe that if you were trying to develop the strongest possible populace, you would want to have this kind of adversity. And they would believe that on this side, notice that no one's even standing up to repeat anything that I'm saying here, that Washington clearly wins out on this. Yes, we do have a large number of serial killers, and that simply puts the alacrity that our populace shows in any task they set themselves to. We also have the world's largest ecological disaster site in the form of Hanford. The experiment to be able to produce supermen using nuclear waste ended up resulting in just more cases of leukemia. But the fact is that at the end of the day, we also produce a large enough nuclear stockpile to be able to obliterate the entire human population multiple times over. We don't do that. That's a sign of Washingtonian restraint. They don't even let Oregon have military personnel or bases outside of their own National Guard, which we believe shows really the weak will that we find in Oregon. Josh.
If your line is going to be that it's good to be bad and that you have all these great bad things, understand that we actually have the largest nerve gas storage facility anywhere in the country. Why? Because they don't trust you with it, because they've been to UW parties and know what it would be used for.
Well, no, actually, I mean, for that sort of facility, first off, it's completely sealed. They don't even let them play around with it or get access to it. Meanwhile, we get a chance to put our Navy personnel on banger submarines that are loaded with nuclear missiles, and we get a chance to patrol around the sub and occasionally pop up in Puget Sound and scare people with a searchlight. So, and moreover, things are so boring in Oregon that they have to actually export up their activists to our state for proper training at Evergreen, which we put right next to our capital for easy bickering access. And moreover, in order to be gassed, you don't even get riots or large protests. Oregon up to substantial size. I'll take WT over anything that you've got any day of the week. Go ahead, Josh.
In Portland, a cop pepper sprayed a baby and tasered a 90-year-old woman who was grasping on the ground for her glass eye. Your WTO's got nothing on that kind of cruelty.
Oh, that's absolutely ridiculous. During WTO, we actually tear gassed people's apartments and shot rubber bullets into schools. I mean, the fact is that Washington has you so far and well beat, and that's not even getting into the rest of the state either. I mean, the fact is that we require that individuals just even participate in government
government have to go as far west as they possibly can. We hid our capital. Yours is an easy, convenient drive away from your major cities. And moreover, how does this end up bearing out? Well, our public servants are vastly superior. How many appointees have we seen out of Oregon recently in presidential administrations? We've gotten 3 just in the last couple months. They're eminently qualified. Moreover, despite all the drug usage that you have in Oregon, ours now heads up the drug war, and we import a lot of the things that you use from Canada, speaking of economics. So the fact is that Washington right now provides much of the basis for the few things that they say are good about Oregon. The few individuals that they brought up as being celebrities either are exported from our own state or they ended up leaving Oregon as soon as humanly possible. The few degrees that they say about their own natural resources, yes, it is placid and tame, and we don't think that's a very positive thing. Washington has far more character, both positive and negative. To the extent that it's negative, it makes us stronger people. Now, they would say, well, your public works projects are inferior. The last point that I'd like to address. As if that is unintentional. Ladies and gentlemen, we have so many colleges within the near the Seattle area that you think that our public works projects are disastrous by some sort of accident. No. The fact is that that's why we produce good public servants in the first place. If you spend your entire life in a city that has completely improper signage, you get lost all the time, and it channels 90% of our traffic through a lane that's about this wide through the downtown area, you're going to end up getting incredibly frustrated and want to change that. But meanwhile, while in Oregon, because they have a completely flat city that's entirely easy to navigate, they're end up recruiting subpar public servants. Ladies and gentlemen, Washington is the cradle for many strong and hard individuals. We would say clearly it is a superior choice, regardless of your intent. Thank you.
I thank the member of government for his speech and now call on the member of opposition to present a speech lasting no more than 6 minutes.
Okay, so there's no doubt that Washington has some prideful problems within their state, but pride is what I'm going to talk about here, my extension in this debate. The pride that Oregonians have, those few who do stick it out in our state, those few who will never, ever, ever leave Oregon. That's the majority of our population. There's no doubt about that. We like to celebrate the mundane things, like where Lewis and Clark happened to drop a doogie. We mark it with a sign. We mark where they made salt out of the ocean. It's a miracle, but they made salt. The Oregon Trail is called the Oregon Trail for a reason. Because you have to call something that boring by a name so brilliant, Oregon. Washington just borrowed its name from a capital that already existed in the East Coast, and you have to call it Washington State every time you refer to it. You don't have to call it Oregon State. Everyone knows Oregon and where it is, because we have a video game that has taught every third grader in the country how terrible cholera can be. We have better health for that reason. For that reason that our third graders understand that if you, you know, drink from the soft spring as you're on your way to Oregon City, you will die. Whereas the pollution, clearly based on the volcanoes that have not yet been apologized for, spreading ash into your waterways, you know, has made it an issue. So the fact that our sewers dump directly into our river, our kids already know not to drink that water. Initially, we have a far more historical relevance. Thomas Jefferson liked our state better. That's why we were the Oregon Territory, not the Washington Territory, not the Evergreen Territory, the Oregon Territory. People moved here for beaver pelting, which is one of the reasons we're a more feminist state than Washington, who has a clear phallic symbol in the form of the Seattle Space Needle, whereas we have a city called Beaverton. We have the Shanghai tunnels, which, where are your opium tunnels? I don't know. Where was your City of the Underworld special? Because we had one. Not to mention, as the debauchery is part of our big pride in Oregon, we have the most independent breweries and the most strip clubs per capita. So if you're having a good time, which Oregonians do based on our unemployment rate, you're going to those breweries, you're supporting your local business, and you're supporting your local strippers. Have you ever heard the term, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy? That's our famous movie, filmed at Timberline. And those are the doughboys turning into serial killers up in Washington, whereas ours are just playing around. And as far as great movies go, we had The Shining, filmed at Timberline Lodge. You had Tom Hanks crying over Meg Ryan in the, what, sixth movie? Sleepless in Seattle, not the best of films. The Shining definitely takes precedence over that one. Now, into a little reputation of what we brought up here is the team over here is like to say that, you know, we're economically inferior. Well, we do have more fun, that's true. They'd like to say that our tax structure is terrible and the worst ever. Well, we have, you know, the wealthy property owners in Oregon that are taking care of all of us college students who don't own any property and quite happily rent our buildings and have free sales tax, which again encourages us to enjoy our college years instead of having to navigate through terrible streets, pay sales tax on your Starbucks beverages, as you like to brag about.
Thanks. Speaking of schools, is it a little bit embarrassing that we have community colleges that outrank your state universities? Seattle Central Community College was rated School of the Year by Time Magazine. Do you have any accolades at all that you'd like to share with us, or does it continue to be a milquetoast state without any distinction?
Now, our state university does accept pretty much anyone who shows up. There's no lie about that. We don't really have admission standards. That's why we're all here. however, we do have Reed College, which if you want to get into the liberal yuppies who are so bent on going after every philosophy that they can think of that makes absolutely no sense and have ridiculously high admission standards, you go to Reed. And our college does outrank the Portland or the Washington schools in that sense. Additionally, we were the first state team to break at a world tournament, whereas yeah, we're a state school and we're still competing against world-class institutions. So, although we let in everybody, the ones we do let in are the top of our class here, our debate team. We make up for the rest of them. Now, Starbucks is the big thing that Washington's bragging about. Starbucks, which is a paper cup full of corn syrup and a little bit of milk that you pay $5 for. Well, Stumptown Coffee, founded in Portland, Oregon, was actually ranked the best coffee in Seattle. So that's a little awkward. There's no doubt that our coffee is better tasting. It wins awards constantly, and it was even talked about in GQ magazine. So ours is definitely a little bit classier than the Seattle coffee. And the literary city, where they're just reading so quickly so that they don't get hit by their massive volcanoes. Well, we have Powell's, the largest independent bookstore in the world. We have an entire city block devoted to books. And while city blocks in Portland are not very big, our city block devoted to books is just ridiculously superior to any of the Borders or Barnes & Nobles where you put your Starbucks in Seattle. Our public market has remained public, whereas your public market has turned into Starbucks market. You know, for all of these reasons, for the reason that we have more historical value, we have a video game named after us, we have better educated third graders who know not to drink from our Willamette River because of that video game, and for the opium tunnels that we value under our city that have made us so strong, this is why Oregon is so much better.
I thank the member of opposition for her speech and now call on the government whip to sum up the government case.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a first for me today. For the first time in my life, I've actually had to discuss Oregon, a state that has so little going for it and so little that actually occurs within it that it has never before taken up an iota of my attention. Whereas Washington has been something I've known about for the entirety of my life. And I'm going to go into what this debate's come down to, which will also tell you why it is that I've had to know where Washington is on a map since the age of five, whereas Oregon was something I had to find out just in order to be weird and different. So, I'm going to talk to you about why it is that economics are just fundamentally better in Washington, and why it is that the culture of Washington actually ultimately produces better people than Oregon. But before that, I'm going to go into some refutation of two, I think, things that really sum up the whole Oregon mediocrity. First of all, we were told that they have breweries in Oregon, and also apparently that they have opium tunnels underneath the state. We would say that of course those things do. To anybody with any amount of rational intelligence, of course you would need opium and breweries in Oregon. It's so boring, there's nothing to do but self-medicate. Moving on, they talk about their local businesses. Again, when you have to drive really far to get to a town, and when there's only one major city in your entire state, yes, you have no choice but to support local businesses. Josh?
So you're saying that your geography test scores are very, very low in your state? Because we know where Washington is.
I'm glad you do. But we don't necessarily need to know where Oregon is, because we're battling volcanoes, which I think is more than any Oregonian will ever be able to say, whereas almost any Washingtonian could say, yes, I took on a volcano, and I won. And also, I think it's just cooler to drive down I-5 and see things exploding. And you get to tell your kids, or your friends, or whatever, hey, look, I fought volcanoes, and they simply can't do that in Oregon. Instead, they occasionally see beavers, apparently, which I'm pretty sure we have, too. So, all right, getting into the meat of the matter. In Seattle, what do we see economically? We see that, Washington. What we actually see is that you have more worldwide globalized companies, which means that you actually, at the end of the day, have more culture, because you have more people coming in from across the world. In particular, you could point to Amazon, Boeing, and Microsoft. These are companies that work across the world, whereas what we saw from Oregon were Intel, Nike, and HP. And while we say that those are important companies, from HP, well, you need Microsoft in order to run HP printers. Nike isn't even actually a U.S. company. It's based in Malaysia. So that's highly problematic. And finally, as far as Intel, well, there are other chips, but we see that worldwide Microsoft is the most used computer operating system. We see that Boeing is one of the major military parts of the U.S. So in Washington, not only are you more protected, you can say, yes, we better protected our nation. Where areas in Oregon, they have tear gas they can't even touch. We have nuclear weapons that we could use if we felt the need. But as Michael pointed out, we actually have the restraint and self-will to say no, whereas the federal government has to tell Oregon no. Finally, we would point out the fact that because of those kinds of companies, you have Seattle, which is a fundamentally more cosmopolitan city than, like, Portland. Because of that, you have people from all over the world coming in, and mixing and melting and wanting to come to Seattle. If you went to anywhere else in the world and asked people if they've heard of the city of Seattle, they'd probably know. But even with the U.S., when you go to an airport, they have to tell you whether you're going to Portland, Oregon, or Portland, Maine. We'd say that's kind of just depressing for Portland, or for Oregon. Finally, moving on to culture. They told us that there are people in Oregon who really like to stay there. And we'd say, yes, there are some people who just enjoy boring things. But we'd say when you actually look at population, there's probably a reason why Washington has more people. There's more stuff to do. It's more fun. And as we've even shown you, our serial killers even beat out Oregon serial killers. We can produce them because we have people to kill, where Oregon doesn't even have that. And when we do it, they do things well, because everybody in Washington is able to succeed no matter what they choose to put their minds to. We just haven't really seen that coming out of Oregon, where people basically cut trees down occasionally and sometimes try to find things to do, where they have to move towards self-medication in order to do that. And also, as we said, people in Washington are capable of restraint. But more importantly, what we could point out is the fact that we have actually our senators are known nationally more than the Oregon senators. And more importantly, we actually have more people who go to the foot level of federal government.
On that point.
I'll take your question.
Sir, have you heard of someone named Beau Breedlove and our mayor, Sam Adams?
Yes, so that's two people. But in Washington, we have numerous people within the presidential cabinet, within the actual federal government. Whereas with Oregon, it's a real struggle, and it's really hard for them. But we struggle the volcanoes, and then it's easy for us to produce people who are able to go and take on better jobs nationally and internationally. We'd say that's fundamentally better. So at the end of the day, when you really look at it, when you really weigh your options out, you're going to want to vote with Washington because it produces more, there's actually more creativity. We actually see that coming from virtually every citizen in Washington. We see that it's a more cosmopolitan state because of its better economics, the way it better fosters business. And at the end of the day, we see that we actually have managed to harness our terrible geology in order to better ourselves as people and as a state. For all these reasons, we would say quite clearly anybody would know more about Washington and want to know about Washington.
I thank the government whip for his speech and now call on the opposition whip to close up this debate for us.
Okay, so I bring a unique perspective today, closing up this debate, that I was raised and born in Seattle and just recently moved to Oregon, so I think we can have a kind of an interesting perspective here in that on Side Oregon, I feel that absolutely there is no way that Washington beats out Oregon. And pretty much today we're going to go ahead and break it down and look at what side Washington has brought to us today. They have told us that, hey, we're more economically sound. We have Starbucks, and yeah, we have volcanoes, but we know how to deal with them, so cool. And we see a lot of problems with that. First of all, as we've pointed out on side opposition, we think that, hey, anyway, sorry. So, going on into what we've discussed today. Yeah.
Do you really want to support a state whose fiscal policy is to support Vancouver, Washington?
We'll see. As we've said today, you know, we totally. Stand. Yeah.
Maybe you could tell us personally why you opted to go to Portland and give us some examples as to why you made that decision and why any of us would want to make the same.
Great. Yeah, sure. I moved to Portland for school, and I think through the time that I've lived in Oregon, I can see some extreme advantages to Oregon. We have better transportation, better coffee, and all around a better city. Portland is way better than Seattle, growing up in Seattle, than I've seen. A culturally diverse city and a city that is accepting. So let's go ahead and cap off this debate and look at 3 points of clash being who's better at being bad economics and who's more geologically crappy. So, yeah, economically, they have a higher minimum wage, but we've also pointed out that, yeah, you guys have a higher standard of living. I thought it sucked when I was younger, and I was 16 years old, barely had working 10 hours a week, and had to pay sales tax. It sucks when you're young, and being able to go down to Oregon, not have to pay sales tax, through an income tax, you pay for what you're accountable for, and we feel that being a good thing on Side Oregon here. And moving on into who is culturally sound, I think anybody who goes from Seattle to Portland can see that Oregon, especially Portland, just has a culturally, more cultural diversity. And we see this throughout the top half brought out in, we have better art, better music, and we support those things, a lot more. So we can see that we're just culturally a lot sounder. And going into this battle of coffee, I guess, if you want to call it, and Starbucks versus Stumptown. That's kind of a joke. I don't even think it's a real, like, debate. You have Stumptown, which is clearly, it's higher ranked, it tastes better, and it uses direct trade. Not only is it better for the economy, it's benefiting the people, the farmers who are actually farming the coffee. And So we feel that, I mean, that's not even a debate. Go Stumptown. So what we see here, finally getting into who is, actually, so we see economically, culturally, and through coffee that Oregon is superior. And for those reasons, I'm going to stay in Oregon.
I'm going to ask the debaters to shake their hands, and the judging panel needs to go out into the green room, and you need to pick one of the four teams as the best. And now, at this time, we're going to ask our commentators to tell us what they think. Debaters, you guys get to stay up here.
Oh.
We're ready to leave.
Ross, how do you think it went?
It was very fun and important. I think the hardest out of the opposition.
And I think that's where the debate really got interesting and exciting. But I love the way that the closing government managed to spin a bunch of positives out of negatives. I thought that was a great direction to take the debate in.
Chris, what do you?
You know, I think there were some big issues that were missed in this debate. Some major things that really do differentiate Oregon from Washington, or that have where we're similar but one state does something better in a particular area that I would have liked to have seen gone into. For example, traffic and roadways and transportation was barely touched on. And also, for me, the biggest thing that makes a city great is what kind of food are they producing? You know, where are you going to get the best food? And that was never even talked about between Oregon and Washington.
Well, in tough economic times, it's really good to know that there's some serial killer openings down in Oregon. So I'd like to thank Josh for bringing that up. I've been looking at some new career opportunities. But I think, it's got to come to what happened in the second opposition when Lindsay got up and really gave the comparison. We're talking about beer, local breweries versus lattes here, and really we're going to have to vote for Oregon because beer is way better than a latte.
Which arguments do you think were the strongest?
I'd actually come out of the government side. I think that some of the business line arguments were the strongest. I think that some of the attacks that the opposition tried to make on the businesses, going with the as was pointed out by government, first saying that Starbucks was unethical, and then moving directly into a praise of Nike, who uses 12-year-old kids to sew soccer balls with their teeth, as an example of a slightly more ethical company. Kind of offset a lot of the ground they were trying to claim there. So I think the business level clash was really where a lot of this came down to, and some subtlety on both sides was lost in this round, trying to discuss those issues with the humor that was applied, but I think was really where a lot of it, to me, came down to the difference makers in this round.
I just know that where I laughed the most, and I laughed the most during the opening opposition speech from Josh, and then especially again during Michael's speech on the closing government. So in terms of, what I enjoyed out of the debate, I definitely enjoyed being able to – I appreciate a team that's able to poke fun at the other teams but also poke fun at themselves at the same time. I wouldn't necessarily cast a ballot for who I voted or who I laughed the most at, but it would be a consideration.
Yeah, seeing how this is going to end up on television, I'm going to have to judge this debate on whether I would change the channel or not. So I think definitely Josh was keeping me from switching to my already recorded 24 or whatever. But I think also I think some of the debate came down to what Michael was both willing to grab a hold of both sides, but he was also willing to move the debate along when it got stuck a little bit. He was using his questions a bit selflessly, so that was good.
What role do you think humor plays in argumentation?
Well, I've seen seemingly the best arguments by an entire team or an entire bench be brought down with one well-timed point of information at some of the world championships. So I think you can never underestimate how well humor plays into personal credibility and the credibility of arguments if you are not able to deal with it in a given debate.
Well, I think given the most of the demographic in this room, as studies show, get more of their news from Jon Stewart than they do from Tom Brokaw, that humor is definitely a key way in getting your message across and getting not just your arguments but your facts across as well, that when you can spin them in a humorous light, people listen more and give them more weight oftentimes.
Go ahead.
How does this debate compare to others that you've seen? I know next week we're going to the national championships in Vermont, and this is a show debate, so it's a little bit different. How would you compare this one to other ones that we've seen in competition?
I think in competition I'd expect a little more subtlety out of the arguments, a little less in terms of the broad strokes that we were getting that do make this an enjoyable round, but I think a little more subtlety in terms of comparing, say, Stumptown to Starbucks and pointing out that while Starbucks may have closed 900 stores in the past year in order to save money, that if Stumptown did the same, Stumptown probably would have about 5 stores left open if I understand their chain correctly. Things like that, where you get into the actual scope of the argumentation, not just the humor that underwrites it.
Yeah, there were a lot of arguments that were brought up that sort of got lost in the debate, sometimes because of the humor, but sometimes because there's just a lot of things to bring up. I would, in a more regular tournament, I would expect certain arguments to be organized better and maintained more consistently throughout the debate. But then again, you can't ever account for the persuasiveness of entertainment as well.
If as Gary got up when he first started and said this debate round is supposed to mirror Parliament, if this is mirroring Parliament, then I'm probably watching a movie, Idiocracy.
Either that or you're watching British Parliament.
That's right.
What points would you give to suggest that debaters might improve? In other words, how would you coach them to improve this debate today?
Well, to the opposition whip, and don't take this as a personal attack, just relax up there more. I know that sometimes when people get in front of audiences that are larger than they're used to speaking at, things can get a little intimidating sometimes. And honestly, nobody in this audience or even on TV is going to be that vested in what you're saying. So relax more and enjoy the fact that you're having this opportunity to speak to everybody rather than letting the lights and the glare and the cameras throw you off a little bit as it appeared that it may have done.
Given that this was a prepared debate that people knew the topic of, days or weeks in advance, I guess I would recommend having more evidence at your disposal to compare and contrast the issues that you think will come up, especially things like economic issues, the compared unemployment rates or comparison and cost of living between the two cities. And you have the time and the ability to have that information available to you, so why not bring it up and use it if you know it's what you're going to be debating about?
The majority of you guys probably all fell into the similar problem where being a public debate, public discussion, humor took the forefront. I really didn't feel throughout majority of the speeches that humor served the arguments. I felt more like arguments were serving the humor.
Chris and Ross, can you tell us about the national championships next week? Many of our viewers don't know anything about the circuit of debate and how do tournaments work? How many people are going to be there? What are the topics going to be like? How are the topics selected?
Well, this is actually, this format of debate, the British parliamentary style, the four-team style that you've seen, is relatively new in the U.S., but has been growing in popularity over the last few years. And the national championship for this style of debate has actually exploded this year over last. When Chris and Portland State hosted last year, about 70 teams were in attendance. This coming tournament is going to have
have almost 150 teams representing, I believe it's over 40 institutions, and including some teams that are making appearances from as far away as India, South Africa, several teams from the UK, as well as a team from Israel and a team from Slovenia are all making appearances at the national championships this year. So this has turned from being a relatively small event, say 3-4 years ago, where we had 40 teams at it, to in excess of 150 teams this year from all around the globe. It's bringing in some of the top judges as well from around the planet that are well versed in this style. And we'll have start off with 6 rounds of preliminary debate, and then a break to octafinals, or the top 32 teams, advancing to a single elimination format after that. And by Sunday night, we'll know who the best team in the U.S. is.
Something very different this year is the last 4 years, the national championships has been held on the West Coast. 3 years at Claremont College in Los Angeles, and 1 year at Portland State in Oregon. And this year, moving to the East Coast is really making it much more broadly available to a lot of teams on the East Coast that just couldn't afford to travel all the way out west for the national championships. And so that's why I think you're seeing a lot of teams bringing, for example, I believe Cornell is going to be there with something like 13 teams. Something you probably wouldn't see if it was hosted on the West Coast, but we do next year, theoretically. Next year, Nationals may be hosted in the West or Midwest again, so we'll see how that affects the number of teams that draw to the tournament.
It looks like our judging panel is back, so I'm going to invite them to come and sit down. Kara, could you tell us who you picked? You have to turn your mic, and maybe just tell us a little bit about how you decided.
Well, I think this is an excellent round from all of the teams. So thank you very much for bringing some not only, I think, important things to say to the round, but also some great humor, which I think this debate really called for. So that was truly excellent. We had a hard time in the hall as a panel kind of considering who would win that top spot, because all of you brought some interesting and unique things to the debate today. So actually, I think we had voted in the hall to allow Jed to sort of like explain our thought process. So I just want to thank all of the teams and turn it over to Jed.
So we end up giving the win to PSU 1. Congratulations, guys.
We're good.
We felt you guys had a very solid balance, some very good arguments, some specifics, and we appreciated that. There was some debate, though. We felt that the Seattle U team had some great manner and really one of the more interesting and enjoyable speeches of the round. Great job, guys. We were just looking for a little bit more whippiness out of the whip speech. Northwest, great job. You guys had some specifics. You guys had probably the strongest physical case as far as having details and content. And then the last team, you guys did a great job of bringing up some of my favorites, Powell's Books and The Good Brew. Fantastic stuff is the reason I like Oregon. So at the end of the day, I guess Oregon's a better state than Washington.
You heard it from Washington judges.
I guess that settles the issue. We now know that Oregon is better than Washington. They're both pretty good states, though. So thanks, everyone. Later on today, we're going to be having a national warm-up tournament at Northwest University in Kirkland and all day Saturday. So I want to thank everyone for listening, and tune in next time when you see more college debates.